First of all,
let me tell you that I can smell dinner already, so I'll try to make a very short presentation. And this is, in a sense, some kind of an excuse, I would say, because I'm not too sure I have so much what to say, but at least to present an idea and not necessarily a full theory. First of all, I would like to go through the points that for me are important, at least when thinking about the topological constant problem, not necessarily the solution. First of all, we have to remember all the time that cosmological constant is a constant. The constant means that it is the same everywhere, and if it's now has this value, later on it will have exactly the same value. It's time independent, unlike dark energy. So having this in mind, we may need to take into account the entire space-time manifold in order to say something about its value. To calculate this non-zero value, or to understand the origin of the non-zero value, we have to do something else, basically. And I think, in my opinion, the important thing is to understand, first of all, the limit in which the cosmological constant vanishes, because otherwise, I don't see how, logically, we can really bridge so such a large discrepancy between predictions of basically of field theory and what we see. So if we have lambda equals zero, at least we have a basis to start and then think about what to do next. However, to get a zero, which is zero everywhere, and to calculate this zero, it seems to me that we don't really need a detailed model or a smart model, and we cannot really depend on the fine details. We have to have an underlying principle. And the question is whether we miss or we don't miss some kind of principle like this symmetry principle. So this is the rationale. And then let me just go through it slowly in some sense. So this is the real introduction. So after a century of general relativity, 100 years more, decades of superstring and M theory, let us not forget superstring theory is here for almost 30 years or so, and with so many extra dimensions floating around, I think we can safely say that the cosmological constant problem or problems basically are still with us very much, they are very much alive. So one way to do is to wait for the so-called quantum gravity to come and to save us. But in the meantime, why not to have some more naive ideas in mind that maybe they can be either helpful or maybe even solve this by itself. So the symmetry of relevance, it looks to me, is a simple shift in the Lagrangian. If we have the Lagrangian that remains as is or up to total derivative, just by shifting the Lagrangian, this would necessarily may account for this lambda equals zero. Question is how to do it. And so far, there is a very limited number of theories like this in the literature, and none of which is really, I would say, adopted as a solution. Maybe the leading one is the so-called unimodular gravity, which in some sense was the equations associated with started with Einstein. I'll come to this later. This theory takes the square root of the determinant to be a constant, and by doing it, by definition, the cosmological constant, at least the one that is put by hand to start with, becomes meaningless, although the price is manifestly a broken general covariance symmetry, either explicit breakdown or spontaneous one, it doesn't matter. But at least it has some kind of I think it's a good starting point. We'll come to this a little bit later. There are some other ideas, some kind called alternative measure, meaning replace the squared of minus g by some kind of a total derivative. Introduce four different fields. It was pushed by Gendelman, but unfortunately, this by itself doesn't seem to work. And at the end, he came out with the so-called two-measure theory, a combination of the two ideas. And recently, I saw something by Tuft, the signature reverse symmetry, I don't really understand it. It means that, so they mentioned, but basically it has to do with some gene, you know, goes to monogene with variance images. Okay. Let's first of all go slowly to the unimodular gravity highlights. And the reason is because what I'm going to talk about will somehow be related to this kind of an idea. So first of all, the equations associated with unimodular gravity were really first introduced by Einstein. I think it was around 1919 when discussing the possible role played by the gravitational field. This is the title, in the structure of elementary particles. And I was amazed when I first saw this kind of paper, because it means that in a given time, Einstein himself thought or replaced his favorite equations by something else. But this means that he felt that something is still missing there. He was trying to get really some kind of a classical electron to hold together. Anyhow, once you have this kind of equation, it's clear that as far as the trace is concerned, something seems to be left out. But there is some kind of a remedy. It needs an assumption. Usually people put this assumption under the carpet, but still one has to assume that energy momentum, whatever it is conserved. And once this is assumed, which is something that sounds logical, but it's not derivable straightforward here, you get basically that something about the trace, and there is a newborn cosmological constant. So this means that somehow the problem here, in this, or the idea here in general, is such that, yes, the one that you put by hand is, first of all, you can wave it away, but when you write down the equation of motion, you get it through the back door somehow. And if this is the case, what it means is that it's not really solved. It's just the level of difficulty has been reduced now, because it's become a constant of integration. And as such, we may depend on initial conditions or things like this. Anyhow, so with this idea in mind, we decided to check something which is really unconventional in some sense. We call it normalized function, normal general relativity. And the whole idea is simply to divide the action of general relativity, the ordinary action of Einstein-Hilbert, by the volume functional. Now, basically, or you can see immediately, very manifestly, that had we had a cosmological constant lambda put by hand in the numerator, it would have been meaningless, because there is the square root of minus g also in the denominator, and this, you can redefine the actions, and really, from this point of view, it's physically irrelevant. So this was the idea to start with. In a moment, I'll come to other aspects of this crazy action principle, but at least to see what it is. First, we need some kind of a constant epsilon just on purely dimensional grounds. Truly, this epsilon and the fact that it multiplies the total volume of space time is a little bit, I would say, we have to regularize or to redefine somehow, but at the moment it doesn't really matter, because the denominator is still a functional. It hasn't yet received a specific value. And then something else which is important for the discussion later, that you can't really add the total derivative. Well, you can add total derivative to the Lagrangian in the upper floor, but this is not necessarily a trivial anymore. So if one has in mind some Gauss-Bonnet theorem in four dimensional things like this, better be careful, because you divide it by something that that has which is non-trivial. Now the first thing is that the first thing to notice that by definition, the action that we start with is non-local. I say non-local at least in the definition of Gelfand and Fomin. This some kind of an action like this, not precisely this one, you will see it immediately on the second or third pages as an example of a non-local object. However, and I would say counterintuitively, we will show that associated equations of motion are actually local, or de facto local. And it turns out that the sole purpose the sole effect of the non-locality somehow is expressed globally by fixing globally one constant of integration that turns out to be the cosmological constant. So the non-locality from this point of view is not, you don't really need the details. You don't really need the exact details, what was in the past, what will be in the future, etc. Somehow, the global integration of everything will eventually fix one constant, and from this point of view, the equation of motion will be local. Okay, first of all, a reminder that non-local functionals of this kind have already been considered in the literature. The first one that I saw first was when I read this paper of degravitation, the original one of Tami Hamed, Mopoulos, Valley, and Gabadate, in which there is a quantity here, which is basically denoting the space-time average of the Ricci scalar, precisely average of the time that I'm going to use. And eventually, when you see something like this entering into an equation of motion, you get a little bit frustrated. But as far as I was concerned, it actually gave me the idea, basically, that we can start from something and getting it via an action principle, and maybe even to get something similar. Then there is a so-called Yamaba problem, which is a mathematical problem, but still I think it has been used here and there in the literature. It looks very much alike, only that the denominator has a different power. And the reason there was just to make sure that this apparently non-local action will have a symmetry or the state variant under global factorization of the metric chamber of the Gini. So at least the idea is there. Oh, sorry. Okay. Thank you. The one, the Yameba?
I think you pointed. Oi. Very easy.
Okay. If I have to swallow something, it would be very unfortunate, but at least that's anyhow. So first of all,
we have to make sure that what we introduce is not something we want to spoil, you know, the thing we know already. So first to make sure all the classical field equations and also the geodesic trajectories remain intact, of course. And as far as the gravitational field equations are concerned, you just make a variation of a ratio, and then what happens basically, you recover the equations of unimodular gravity. They're right here. The only thing, even this lambda twiddle, is actually we don't know what it is. At least we haven't calculated yet. But it is basically the action itself. Yeah?
The gravity, you don't have the traceless combination left hand side?
Yeah, but you can always afterwards, after you have introduced your effective cosmological, the new cosmological constant, you can recast it in the ordinary form.
Ah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. As long as you don't know what it is, the trace is arbitrary. So in this stage, it's still a constant, but it has to fulfill
something. And here is the difference. This is the extra piece that ordinary unimodular gravity doesn't have. Because what you do now, you have a parameter, arbitrary parameter lambda twiddle, so you can calculate, solve this equation, find the solution, dim mu, which is a function of x and this extra parameter lambda. But now what you do you have something, you know something else. This lambda eventually is proportional to the action itself. So you plug it in the action, and what you get? You get basically a functional equation, because I of lambda is what you calculate. The action calculated by this under this gimu, no? It equals by definition to the action itself. This is what you see here, I lambda equals 2 lambda over epsilon. It's actually an equation, a global equation to be satisfied. A priori, we don't know what the result of this is going to be. But at the end of the day, we have here only one constant of integration, lambda twiddle. And therefore, as I said before, we think that it's quite remarkable that the entire non-locality, which is actually hidden in this I, which is an integration over the manifold, we'll come to this a little later, everything goes into fixing one parameter. So this is a minimization condition in which there are fields, and there is a parameter. You have to do both.
Yeah. Minus 1/2 on the right-hand side, correct, in the top line?
Yeah, that shows along maybe what I choose, the 16 pi g something.
And
it's self-consistent.
And a different dimension.
Absolutely. Self-consistent. Yeah, I was lazy enough to try, you know, change everything, so I left it as is, but yeah, it's
self-consistent.
So now, since there is a global
constraint, or not constraint, a global condition, basically, for me, this actually signals the revival of the Mach principle. The reason is that you don't know what this lambda really is, but in order to calculate its value, you have to integrate over the manifold. So it's, in a sense, this is the whole manifold that actually works hard to give you this value that you can even test locally, because it affects your equations of local equation of motion. So I would refer to what is here as a revival of the Mach principle. And as I say, it's really, I couldn't find the right way to put it down, but what I wrote, a minimal touch of non-locality, and this explains what we had in mind. So there is a non-locality, there is something which is integrates over the manifold, and eventually, but just fixes one parameter. What Mach itself wrote in his mass there governs inertia here, but as far as I know, somebody, I don't remember his name, even wrote a paper in which there are 10 different definitions of Mach principle. So I think this is the 11th definition. So it's not that clear, because in Hawking and Ellis' book, you can find a more sophisticated, I would say, way to say it, that local physics laws are determined by the large scale structure of the universe. Okay, with this in mind, we recall, and that will be important, we recall that the domain of integration will be the whole manifold, because right now it could be anything, but if you have in mind Mach principle, it would be very difficult to decide that there is a border here and here, and just to put, you know, surface terms, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe the good idea is to put it integration over the whole space-time manifold, because everything contributes. Here is an example, just to get the strength of what we have. Let's consider an empty space-time. So we start with T mu nu equals zero, but the equation of motion, you have this lambda twiddle entering as a constant to be determined. And when you do it, it turns out that this equation that we wrote down before, the global or the integration over the manifold, the action is 4 lambda over epsilon. By definition, it equals 2 lambda over epsilon. And the solution of this equation that looks very, very algebraically simple is lambda twiddle equals zero. So this is a demonstration, in fact, that when you consider normalized general relativity and fully consistent with Einstein philosophy, at least from what I read in Pi's book, because he was very frustrated by the fact that there are curved solutions, although there is no matter in, at least here, the result is that an empty space-time is Ricci tensor flat, and I say Ricci tensor flat in the, from the Einsteinian point of view, but it doesn't mean that this is totally flat unless you invoke some kind of maximum symmetry of integration. Anyhow, bear in mind that the opposite statement is not necessarily true, meaning that T mu nu is non-zero, this does not necessarily imply that we have a non-zero cosmological constant in this kind of theory. Okay, now to demonstrate this point I mentioned before about adding non-trivial derivatives to the action, suppose you are in 4 dimensions and you can add a Gauss-Bonnet term, which is 4 dimension total derivative. So usually the classical equation of motion do not care about it, but now apparently they don't care right now, but when you calculate the value of I here, there is a contribution. So instead of getting just a simple result I equals zero, we get now a quadratic equation to solve that has two solutions. Luckily, one of them is I equals zero, so at least we have the previous success in some sense, but there is another one. The other one is very bad because it explodes at the C goes to zero limit. So this is definitely not the one which is related, I would say, continuously to the solution that we have. Anyhow, this raises the possibility, it raises the possibility in some sense whether the cosmological constant non-zero value has maybe a topological origin, meaning when you work with other powers of R or extra terms, something comes out. I haven't done any calculation in FR theories, but at least I have to point about this kind of a possibility here. Oh, definitely.
The one way to phrase cosmological constant problems to say that the Einstein equation was a bare cosmological constant for lambda zero.
Yeah.
You're right, lambda effectively to lambda zero plus delta lambda. But the problem is that when you calculate delta lambda from field theory, it's huge.
Let's wait for this example.
So why, if you have this lambda to it, isn't that just a bad cosmological constant?
No, it's not. Later on, I'll give you an example with the full scale of field theory, in which you'll see exactly what happens when you put a potential in. What happens to the, you know?
You get protected from higher.
Or getting protected. The theory knows that this must be the case. Now, but I can at least demonstrate this just in special cases, because not every theory, you need a Lagrangian, right, to start. But yeah, definitely. And suppose you haven't absorbed the original lambda, yeah, everything remains as is. I mean, just, you know, they look a little bit different, but the same conclusions.
Because in unimodular gravity.
Yeah.
The constant of integration is like lambda zero, some number. The question is it protected from the higher order?
Well, that's all the protection you can ask the higher authorities that will give you authority.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm going to show.
But this is the only solution.
Well, no, this is better.
What's that?
Yours is better because you
can you say it once again?
Mine just protests, yours explains.
Well, at least one referee didn't think so. Okay, now to probe the effect of matter, we'll do a small calculation here, but this is exactly probing.
I say probing and not calculating, because what I want really to do is to put a point particle and really make a full calculation. But the point particle sources in general relativity are a little bit difficult to handle because of this theorem of the Jerosz and Strachan. So, and since we need everything in a Lagrangian formalism, what we can do is really to avoid a little bit here and there, and I'm not too sure I've done here the everything taken into account. So this is just probing, just to see what's going on when you add a little bit of matter in. And actually, we calculate, first of all, the piece, the average of R. This is the first thing to do. This can be done easily because the equation is very similar to electromagnetism. And then we have this extra source at minus M integral dt and see what's happening. You see, well, what we start with is arbitrarily Schwarzschild plus the sitter, under the sitter, whatever, because we don't know what lambda quiddle is. We have to calculate this lambda quiddle. So we start with something arbitrary. And then upon calculation, when everything comes together, you can see here that this is the effect of matter here. This is the pieces that were associated with the previous empty space, and the matter comes right in. And what you get is, and at least some formula for lambda quiddle, which is M over 4 V3. V3 is actually what's left from the tree volume, but without this 1 over 2 M over R factor calculated, because the VR it cancels out, so it's very much like in flat space. So basically, V3, we know, goes to infinity, and it doesn't matter if it's whatever is there, and at least you can probe that the zero value of lambda quiddle will be related somehow to the huge dimensions of space or space-time. But even if it goes to zero, it goes to plus zero, and that's a point that one would like to remember for some reasons late, to be later on. So, okay. Anyhow, by a pure coincidence, and there is a question mark because I came to this calculator later in the mini superspace, and it turns out that it's not a coincidence, but at least right now it looks as a coincidence, that for a finite spatial volume, if it is finite, then what you get is precisely the value which appears in Einstein, so-called Einstein static universe. Now, this may be a coincidence or not, but as I said, I have a reason to believe that it's not a coincidence, although right now it looks completely independent. Okay, now comes the first example that I can really do field theory with. And this means take a minimally coupled scalar field. We know how to write the Lagrangian arbitrary V at the moment. We have a thing you know, which everybody knows how to write. Then we just go to the equation of motion and we do what we're supposed to do. We can trace them in order to get eventually to get the R, etc. And space-time averaging, etc., etc. And doing it, we get this kind of a relation in which this is the space-time average of the kinetic theorem, and this is the function, the potential, which is there. You plug it in into the master constraint, or I'm sorry, master this integral consistency condition. And now it looks like this. Very easy to see that the kinetic part drops altogether, and what's left is just the average of the potential. But when you see what is there and you calculate everything, it turns out that what's left is basically equivalent or exactly the same like an ordinary general relativistic field theory with the scalar potential, but the effective potential is precisely this one. It's the V, the original V, minus the space average, the space-time average of this V. And as you see, this is the answer to your question. What happens here, that's not lambda freely equals zero by the combination. So once you add something for free, maybe later even some kind of, I don't know, some kind of bottom energy of this type of another, the theory is sensitive, insensitive to this, and this is demonstrated right here. So this is the potential, take V and shift it by a constant. And this constant can be just a number for fun, or maybe the vacuum energy. You don't need to know more than this is a constant, a true constant. And the effective potential is completely, doesn't care about it at all. So from this point of view, we can claim that, well, in a moment we'll see the claim. Where is it? We'll come to the claim a little bit with steps. First of all, we'll take one example that we sit down. There is an ordinary potential bounded from below. We sit in its minimum. And this is, of course, the ground state solution. So as long as we are there, then the effect, the average V is nothing but the V minimum. And then by definition, of course, the effective V vanishes. Which means a zero cosmological constant. But you can do better than this, because what you can do is once you allow your scalar field really to glide slowly or fast as a matter toward this minimum, as long as this takes an infinite amount of time, at the end of the day, the average of the potential will be the minimum. We'll demonstrate this point exactly later on at the mini superspace level. So this means that even if you had somewhere along the line some kind of inflation period that took a short period, it just will add a constant value, a constant number to the numerator. But eventually, at the end of the day, once it settled down there in the bottom of the potential forever, then you are absolutely safe. Yeah.
So. That's okay.
So if you put in the Higgs potential, as we know, and you calculate the vacuum tensors, you get Higgs mass to the fourth power over 800. So this is what gives this huge number, 10 to the 56 times the known vacuum density, observed vacuum density. So when you do this subtraction, you avoiding the fine tuning of 56 decimal places?
Yeah, this is what I'll try to convince you. In fact, I'll say even more than this. They say that the statement is right now at the level for conjecture. So maybe that's some 5 point, but the claim is that the only thing they have to know about the vacuum energy, that's a constant. And that's it. I don't need to know the cutoff. I don't need to know anything. I just need to know that this is eventually a constant. And if this is true, then basically what you have is just shifting the...
The point is that we, in the constant space-time, you can cancel, you can just subtract out.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you have gravity...
No, but this is what I'm telling you. When you come back to this theory, to the... This theory is equivalent to a theory in which the minimum sits at level zero. Well, you can start with any potential that you like. The effective one sits, you know, on the floor. So here it is. I would
even dare to say this is, of course, not necessarily true what I say in the upper part. Also in the lower part, but at least I would say that from this point of view, the cosmological constant is nothing but half of the space the space-time average of the effective, and from this point of view, it's zero by definition, actually. And the argument now goes further, and this is you can just read it. I wrote it. Here it would not be true, but this is to say what I've said before, that one may further argue that when adding a variety of the standard model fields into the matter Lagrangian, the above formula establishes a simple yet a powerful mechanism for canceling out the vacuum zero-point energy. In fact, there is no need to calculate the zero-point energy or even carrying correctly identified physical cutoff. The only vital piece of information is that it is a conserved constant energy density. This way would be effective being inert to a shift, then the overall result that the lambda physical zero prevails. I think it's true, but yeah, sure.
Oh, causality is violated.
But once you calculate lambda quivers, once you use an integration of the whole space-time, causality is violated.
And what's going to happen in the universe in like a trillion years from
Precisely. But the point is that you don't care about the details. It's what I'm trying to tell you.
I don't.
You don't. It's like a chemical reaction that you need some kind of catalysator. You need it there in order to work. But at the end of the day, you don't really. You can throw it away.
But you know, there is a slightly different way to think about it. In a certain sense, I mean, this universe has to evolve in the right way to produce its possibility for the evolution in the right way. You see, suppose you start with a universe...
Nothing is wrong with this at all.
No, well, right, it's just a little bit, you know, chicken and the egg problem seems to be resolved. Right? I mean, in some sense, if you take a model where a solution exists such that the future cosmology has a large volume lambda, these equations will start consistently produce a large effective volume lambda. I understand. I will say to the defense of this argument,
no,
not being, you know,
no, as I said, at the moment that I wrote down a functional or an action which is non-local, you can't make it non-local in space. It must be non-local, you know, space.
No, I understand. It's true that Feynman and Wheeler speculated a long time ago about this sort of anti-causal boundary conditions, a single electron, and so on and so forth. So maybe in the spirit, it's a...
We'll have to have a nice discussion later. Too many remarks are vital remarks are coming, yeah. Okay, and then, of course, if what we really measure may be nothing but measuring the effective potential itself is a function of time. Maybe the fact that we have something which is non-zero, it's a maybe, of course, just because we haven't yet come at this very moment to the bottom, at least this explains the sign, but it says nothing about the magnitude. Okay, now finally, I want to discuss, don't take too long, as I promised, normalized general relativity cosmology. And I want to say something about it, because this is needed to avoid the problem here. The problem basically is the fact that the standard Friedman-Robertson-Walker-Ringel-2 momentum tensor is a perfect fluid. Is not derivable directly from a Lagrangian, and from this point of view, we cannot put this to work into the machinery. So in general relativity, it's not a big deal. You make averages, and then this, and then that, you have to get an equation of motion, you can deal with it. But here, everything starts with the Lagrangian formalism, so it's a little bit difficult to do. We can do it, of course, with scalar field, time-dependent scalar field like before, but we want to do it in something more general. So to avoid the problem, or at least, it's to avoid, but there is a price, of course, you go to the mini superspace level, where basically the density O of A can be put in the action principle as a potential source. It is written like here, so you start from this mini superspace action, and this is rho of A, and when you put everything into the, you write down the equation, or derive from the equation, with A of T being the field, then you get what you're supposed to get. One thing that we still have to remember here, that usually when Hawking does a mini superspace, calculating the wave functions, etc., is also very total derivative, and actually he has this, what you are left with is just this part, which is quadratic in A dot squared, etc. But here we cannot solve it away, so we have to keep everything there, because as we saw before, it will affect the value of the integral at the end, so it's still there. But this doesn't mean anything. You can still get the equation of motion, right, of course, and out of it. So here it is. This is the formalism in the language of the normalized general relativity in the mini superspace. This is what we have to minimize. As before, if suppose there was some kind of a lambda somewhere, then we can always bring it to the left-hand side, defining the quantities that we minimize, so it's irrelevant. Okay. Now, when we do the field equation, the minimization, of course, like before, there are two pieces. One piece comes from the numerator, and the other piece for this two lambda put in front is the contribution of the denominator. And the equation look like what? The equation looks like what they're supposed to look, you know, this equation. See, is that you put the information back into the consistency condition. What you get is a very neat formula, but the cosmological constant in this formula is nothing but half the average, the space-time average of rho plus 3p. And this is very neat, and even tells you that you don't really need to know too much about rho and p, because it, at the end of the day, this is nothing but a kinematical constraint. It's a statement about the acceleration of the universe, A double dot over A, averaging over time. Now, the fact that rho plus 3p enters means that we have to do three different analyses here. We won't do all the three, because one is just, you know, what you're going to get eventually. But at least let's see what's the idea there. So suppose we are dealing with ordinary matter for which rho plus 3p is bigger than zero. And here I took an example to calculate. You can do whatever you want. One example is this
radiation. It's a good example because you can solve easily the equation of motion. Now, by definition, this lambda is combined from this equation is greater on or equal to zero. You don't have to calculate to discuss the possibility of a negative lambda, but that's of course not enough because this formula above is nothing but a consistency formula. So you assume some lambda bigger than zero, you plug it in, you have to calculate. And once you calculate, you see what's the outcome, what do you get there? So we'll do it for two cases, for conventional matter and then for what? I remarked about the Grossi matter. The case in between is trivial, although it sounds very dramatic, something like network. As this scale of rho plus 3p exactly zero means that lambda equals zero and we have a solution lambda equals zero. That's very nice, but it's not the most general. Okay, so consider conventional matter, and the question is whether lambda equal bigger than zero is possible. Now, when you let x be a squared, then you get a very neat equation there that you can handle easily because this is just analytical mechanics. C squared, C is not the velocity of light here, the speed of light. This is just a constant amount of radiation, C squared over 8 to the 4. And immediately you see that the three possibilities with regard to K are in red on the corner above, and the value of C squared, which is positive, that just tells you if it's above or close to the barrier. So one thing for sure, for there are several cases, if K is less or equal to zero, these are the two cases here, this and this. And also if K is bigger than zero, the upper part, but K squared is smaller than four lambda over three C squared, then you can show that the evolution goes forever, all the way to infinity. That's important because when you calculate, we have to know to do it over the old space-time manifold. So for this case, we calculate and you see what happens with here as a function of t. When you calculate what happens to the average, rho plus cp is a function of t, it goes to zero when t goes to infinity. So this means that this is inconsistent. You cannot find your lambda bigger than zero solution for these cases because eventually this quantity goes to zero and you have assumed the head lambda bigger than zero. If K is bigger than zero, there are two possibilities, because you can be on the left-hand side, you can be here, and the total time is finite, or you can be outside, and then it grows all the way to infinity, and according to the two possibilities, you see what's happening. In one case, it's exactly like it was before, but the other one is special. The other one is special because the amount that the delta t is finite. When the delta t is finite, you have to sit down and calculate. And when you do it, and you finish the calculation, you find out that lambda has a value, 3k squared over 4c squared. And of course, the only possibility for the counts is k bigger than zero. When you see what this means, this is precisely, remember the static Einstein universe mentioned earlier. So this allows only all static Einstein universe, or actually asymptotically approaching static Einstein universe. And the reason why is this there, and this is not a non-generic solution, of course, because it depends on, once you change a little bit the value of the parameter C, you get a different value. Because basically, remember that the value of lambda is associated with the space-time average of A double dot over A. So when you have a situation in which A basically is finite, you sit there on the top of the hill in Einstein universe, then A double dot is zero, you have a very nice solution there and you can self-consistently understand it. So it is there, but again, what I say, it's a different branch because you can look at what happens at the limit that this C, the amount of radiation, the constant there goes to zero slowly, slowly. And this brings you to another branch because it's lambda goes to infinity. The what? Yeah, C squared, yeah. K is the plus minus one of zero, yeah. Then we can ask the same question whether, okay, we know what happens with there. Is lambda equals zero possible? Again, the same situation, but now there are three possibilities. And what you do, you can calculate, okay, bigger than zero, equals zero, or less than zero, and see what's happening. Now you don't need graphs. For k equal, bigger than zero, you get a number, because now, okay, the t is bounded from this point to that point on the upper side. You get a number, the number is non-zero, and you have assumed lambda equals zero, so you cannot have k bigger than zero. But you can have k equals zero and k less than zero, because at the limit that t goes to infinity, capital T goes to infinity, this goes to zero. So in a sense, it's not only that we were able to reconfirm the result that lambda, the generic solution lambda equals zero exists, but there is a bonus. And the bonus is the restriction that the tree space cannot be closed. And this is something which goes beyond Einstein, of course, because as far as Einstein is concerned, there are allowed solutions here. So whether this is good or bad, I don't know, but this is the bonus, it's a side effect. So it means that usually that there may be a little bit more inside this consistency condition that we started with. So, well, that's, no, K, it's allowed. Maybe K bigger than zero not allowed. K bigger than zero not allowed because you calculate the integral and you get something non-zero. But you have assumed that lambda is zero, so there is a contradiction. Just No, K, there's no limits on K. K, you can always redefine your scale such that K will be plus, minus, one, or zero. I mean, don't. No. The only thing that matters here is not that all this calculation is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is at the end.
Here I discuss only the possibility that lambda is zero. Lambda bigger than zero was on the previous transparency. Lambda less than zero is not there at all because we work with rho plus 3p positive.
But it seems that all you're saying that the only way to have a non-vanishing lambda is that the universe ends after a finite time, basically.
No. Ah, yeah, that's true.
So, okay, so then you're predicting the fact that you observe lambda to be
not. That's not enough. I mean, this is a, it's a finite time, but this is, if you go backwards to the previous transparency, you see that this is from, sorry, that this is related there with the, a specific value and specific constraint, etc. Yeah. So it's not whenever you have a finite time, it will be okay. You have to be careful. But in general, you're right. What we see here, that there is a generic lambda equals zero solution, plus this bonus that K cannot be positive, and there is a, another non-generic solution which corresponds to an Einstein universe. This we have already.
To finish with it, so suppose we put in a material for which rho plus 3p is less than zero, the argument goes very much alike. Now lambda by definition is smaller or equal to zero, and again you can show that lambda equals zero is a solution, is singled out generically, and now without any constraint of k, of course, and there is also a non generic solution, which I call the anti-Einstein. What, I don't know what this means. Anti-Einstein means that the graph goes this way. But there you cannot really asymptotically approach it. You have to be there at the bottom of the. The other one is, of course, trivial. So, since I was close to make my promise, here is to summarize the main point. First of all, the cosmological constant here is a concrete non-local realization of Mach principle. The other point is that an empty space-time is necessarily Ricci tensor flat. owing to the non-negativity of mass, the cosmological constant is non-negative definite. Here it's again looks like, but it's a little bit shaky. And then invoking the scalar field paradigm, while the physical cosmological constant strictly vanishes, it is a dark energy which resembles a positive decaying cosmological constant. And two remarks about the mini superspace. At first, we confirm, of course, what we had before, and if the matter is gravitationally attractive, then the universe cannot be closed. The other one is clear. And there is also, to summarize, the main drawbacks, as you can see, and so far, so far, there are none. But I'm sure there will be immediately plenty of them. Okay, thank you.
Protection. Everything that we've looked at the last 20 years, the right lambda effect to equal lambda zero plus delta lambda. And you calculate delta lambda, it's huge. So you end up fine-tuning this number to bear cosmological constant. The integration constant, this enormous thing.
I don't fine tune anything.
How do you get rid of it?
I don't fine tune anything. The theory itself, the fact that there is in the denominator something that precisely cancels that, you know, the factor that the ordinary cosmological constant multiplies, this is the trick. There is nothing else. It's a mathematical trick from this point of view. But there is no fine tuning.
You don't.
There are other troubles maybe, but it's not fine tuning.
You don't protect it, you kill it.
What?
You don't protect it, you kill it.
let's say that I'm open for suggestions. But at least what, as I said before, I thought that it would be very important, at least try to understand the limit. Once you understand the limit, there may be a lot of possibilities, especially when we talk about averages, and you know that averages, you can play a little bit with statistics, averaging, you know, and get something which is maybe not, maybe averaging the square or something, you know. But this is open, I mean, I don't know. I mean, as I said, this is just an idea at the beginning, not really a full deal.
Can I ask a question? I'm not familiar with the background of what you're explaining.
Really?
I'm not familiar with the background of what you're explaining, the minimum of your theory, but if you want to
he's not any modern.
Yeah, okay.
He's normalized. Okay. Yeah, different.
If with other observations, cosmological observations, you
honestly, if there is one problem they solve here, I don't care about anything else. No, on the contrary, the idea here was not to interfere with anything else. This was the main point, not to interfere. What we wanted to get is to keep all the equations as they are, not to interfere with anything, just to get the ordinary general relativity and this extra piece of information that you can solve this lambda. That's it. So if you ask me what kind of predictions do I have, I don't know. Maybe later on, if it turns out that this evolve somehow and you can get a number for the cosmological cone, this would be fantastic. But at the moment, I don't know.
But the second statement in your conclusion, maybe I'm not interpreting correctly. You are saying that the empty space-time is necessarily the key.
Yeah. This is what Einstein said, almost. Because you have just the arm you know, you don't have the full Riemann with you. So the only thing that you can get from local equations is just information about the arm you know. So in principle, it leaves you some degrees of freedom that are non-zero. But as far as the equations of motion are concerned, it's irrelevant. So I could refer to this as flat. It gives me good feeling, though, but just not to keep it.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So usually we don't like to have a ratio of in the action because quantum mechanically it doesn't make much sense. So why would you think that this one is better than?
I don't know. This is the right answer. I don't have the finest idea. The only thing that I know is the following: that at the moment, even this epsilon that introduced in the first place, I can handle it, let's say, nicely, or at least regularizing in some way, in the case of weak field, weak gravity. If you push me to the corner, there may be trouble. There are other things that I don't know about how to do quantum mechanics, put it into a path integral, etc. I don't have the finest idea.
Even something which is much more modest than that. Just, the Wilsonian level, if you add
the
Wilsonian level,
yeah.
If I just put a cutoff and you add the relevant terms, then what should I do? I should put them downstairs, upstairs, and I think that if I start to put things downstairs and immediately.
Now, here the idea is, at least this is the idea, I don't know what will come out of it later. But the idea is that the only thing that lives in the denominator is just the volume and nothing else. The
is it itself. Or
something?
What
I don't know.
If I make a comment, ask the question.
Right, I don't know.
Let me just continue.
Maybe you'll get, maybe you'll get a partial answer to this tomorrow.
Well, I wanted to set up a question. Weinberg challenged unimodular gravity by saying, in some sense, and he mentions it in his review and says he would take it seriously if there's a quantum theory whose quantum effect of action is unimodular. So that can be done, and I'll explain that tomorrow. Would you be happy if there was a quantum theory whose quantum effect of action was a ratio, was this ratio?
Would you
then?
Let's wait until tomorrow.
Well, I don't know if you can do that by tomorrow.
No, I can wait until tomorrow.
Actually, while we are waiting for tomorrow, let me just ask this question, I think, which is related to Sunny's question in a slightly different way. So you wrote down an action, which is basically the division of the usual action by the volume of the universe, for volume of the universe. Let's forget for a moment about gravity. And let's think about what that implies for an electron in this room. I mean, Dirac taught us that in principle, if we move an electron from t to t plus delta t, we should multiply its wave function by e to the is, s being the phase of the quantum system. Should I think that in this theory, in sufficiently small spaces where I can ignore curvature, as time goes on and v gets bigger and bigger and bigger, the action basically, the phase.
V is not getting bigger and bigger. V is infinite. In other words,
right. So
in other words, V may be infinite as a solution, but I think that the regularization should be such that the multiplication of epsilon times this V will be a constant. This way, at least, I can save my skin. At least
the question is basically: what is the action that goes in the definition of the quantum phase of an electron?
I don't know.
Is it okay?
I don't know.
That's a fair answer.
Oh no, definitely. That's this. I don't know. It took me some time before I sent this to the archive because this would bother me. I don't know. I can always say that you don't know how to do path integral with gravity involved.
Maybe the Schrödinger equation.
Yeah, but that's at least Schrödinger. In a given background, I'm safe.
But then,
but once, yeah, yeah. No,
but then Schrödinger equation will favor the other, usually.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see.
Talk about
as I say, as a background, I'm safe. As long as you want it to be dynamical, then I don't know what to do. Beyond this, the weak gravity level. Fair enough.
Sure. Okay. In principle, you can put everything in a box for atomic physics. You can put everything in a box. And only in large distance scale, you take a box.
The problem I have with that is that will then tell me that the things you put in the system, the electron in this room. Every experiment in
I can put it in a causal box.
That becomes
the if it depends
and
on the size of the box,
if
it depends on the size of the box, I have to worry about the electron in the moon to calculate the diffraction pattern in this room.
Well, you are, of course,
I think it would drop out.
Because of quantum statistics and things like that. You have to asymmetrize your electron.
I understand the mathematics and so on and so forth. But in fact, the prediction is such that I worry about the correlation of two electrons on the moon. About the argument, the diffraction experiment.
I think
that would
come out. A great question. That's right. quantum mechanics already is not local, maybe this needs to
not in such an obvious way. Well, it's cleverer than
that's
the
way
that
we come up with.
Well,
no. That's
we wait for tomorrow, right?
There's a lot to ask. I was only going to do even modular tomorrow.
You can ask me tomorrow this question.
Well, you have 24 hours to work on it. Okay, let's take a speaker again.